It's a pleasure to hear this 16th century composition for the lute played on a modern guitar. Her sensitive rendition of this piece, amongst others, is why Sharon Isbin was recently awarded a second Grammy for Best Instrumental Soloist Performance. Virtually unheard of in the classical music world. She's caught the attention of musicians and music lovers alike, not least the President of the United States.
Okay.
Sharon, great to have you here.
It's great to be here.
Okay, I'm going to plunge right in and say, you've played at the White House.
Yes, this was an evening concert for the president, his wife, two children, and 300 of their best friends, and it was really exciting.
Fantastic.
I had a 20-minute slot to prepare for that, so I played Asturias, and I played two South American pieces, one from Venezuela and one from Brazil.
Great. Maybe you could give us a little flavor of
sure.
A couple of them.
The one from Venezuela was... then it goes on, and then it segues into the Brazilian part.
Sharon travels extensively in search of music, which has taken her to Latin America. One of her early teachers on a summer course in Venezuela was the great Alerio Díaz, a really joyful player who inspired her love for the region. But of course, the home of this music is Spain.
So you get the idea. And then the Asturias is, of course, a very famous piece. It begins inspired by the Spanish tradition of the flamenco guitar.
However many times I've heard it, the Asturias still gives me goosebumps. It's the work of Isaac Albéniz, who wrote it at the beginning of the 19th century, especially for the modern guitar. It's a piece that brings out the range and the versatility of the instrument.
And then it has a beautiful middle section, which is the flamenco singer. So I really love the emotional connection to that piece because it has the excitement of the loud and the fast and the real intimacy and lyricism of the middle section where you can really feel the cry when you hear this. You can feel the cry in the voice. Yeah. That's what really makes this such a personal instrument. No pick, no pedals. No keys, no reeds, nothing separating you from
yes.
making the music and the strings.
Yes. And also, it's an instrument you hold.
Yes, you cradle. It becomes part of your body. Yeah.
Greensleeves is an old English folk song, probably composed in the 16th century, as it's included in William Bellett's lute book. And William Bellett would hardly recognize the guitar that Sharon's playing. It's actually a very different instrument to the lute and a relative newcomer to classical music.
The modern guitar, the kind that we all play on nowadays, was put together by a man called Torres in the 1840s, 1850s.
Graham Wade is a classical guitarist as well as a writer and a lecturer on the guitar.
He was a guitar maker in Almeria in the south of Spain, and he was a genius, and he invented, if you like, a new string length for the guitar, which was 65 centimetres, and he put struts under the front of the instrument, and he made it far more resonant and far more capable of wonderful sounds, especially in the higher registers of the instrument. And every guitar maker ever since has looked back to Torres as the founding father of the modern guitar.
Sharon is known as a musicologist as well as a musician, something her teacher Andre Segovia disapproved of. But her revelations about Bach's compositions for the lute have been groundbreaking.
guitarists used to despise musicology and musicologists. In fact, for Segovia, one of the greatest guitarists that ever lived, he used the word almost as abuse. You know, a musicologist was slightly below a musician. But since the rise of the early music movement, where people were keen on authentic performances, it's been more and more important for instrumentalists and recitalists to understand the music that they're playing. With Sharon Isbin, she was certainly a pioneer of this, because Roslyn Turek was a pianist who decided that perhaps Bach's music should not be played on the modern piano, and yet she wanted to play it on the piano. So she would have concerts where she played the first half on the harpsichord and the second half on the piano. And Sharon came into this area, and through the tutelage of Roslyn Turek, she began to look at ornamentation, for example, which is very important in 18th century music. She began to look at the nature of Bach's writing for the lute, and she began recording them and producing editions, which really are some of the best editions that were ever published. And so this was a new thing in the 70s and 80s, and people became far more aware of the music they were playing and treating it, as it were, in a far more respectful manner, I think.
Bach is my favourite composer. The feel of his music has definitely made a great impression on my own approach to music. In Merchant of Love, I wanted to create a really clean, classical sound. Someone help me find the merchant of love with a full guarantee. Sharon is playing a guitar made for her by Tony Muller. Are you giving direction to the size, the tone, the wood?
I actually do. I specify the distance between the first string and the sixth string. And by making the strings a little bit closer, you can actually play faster on the right hand because you have less distance to travel. So I give very specific numbers for that. And basically, I'm asking for something that has a beautiful sustain. So that roundness, that sweetness, that fullness of the sound, that to me is my ideal of what I want a guitar to sound like. And then, of course, the clarity. And you want the note to last. You don't want it to die. You want to be able to hit a sound vibrato and have that continue, just like a voice.
Right. How did you start on the guitar? What made you pick up, well, and especially classical guitar playing, what made you come to that?
I actually started by default. I was 9 years old when our family moved to Italy. My father's a scientist, and we were spending a sabbatical year there. My older brother, who was 7 years older, said he wanted guitar lessons. So my parents discovered this amazing teacher who had studied with Segovia, brought my brother for the interview, and he said, "Wait a minute. I want to be Elvis Presley, not this classical stuff." And I volunteered at the age of 9 to take his place.
As a young girl playing the classical guitar, Sharon was pretty much alone. Even today, she's one of a small handful of female classical guitarists to gain recognition.
Having role models is a very important thing for a young girl growing up. I can't tell you the number of times I've been approached by either children or people in college saying, "I'm so glad that you're doing what you're doing. It really inspires me as a woman to be a guitarist." And I didn't have that experience as a kid. I had lessons with Andre Segovia or Julian Bream, but there weren't really any major women figures at that time. Ida Presti was a great guitarist from France, but she died very young. I never had the honor or pleasure of hearing her. The challenge I have found is actually really much more about the guitar itself rather than being a woman. There are many orchestras still who have never played with a classical guitar. And to be the first guitarist to record with a New York Philharmonic, you can't imagine saying that if you're a violinist or a pianist or a singer.
Is it back to a prejudice against the guitar, or is it that there's not that many pieces that are written for the guitar and orchestra? Because now you're championing it, you're inviting right. people to write and update the instrument for orchestra. You're doing something
absolutely right.
incredible.
And we don't have Chopin, for example. We don't have Brahms. We don't have Beethoven. That's one of the reasons why it's so important working with modern-day writers to get as much literature as possible. And I think that the other side of the coin was amplification. In the old days before that was perfected, it was a little hard to hear the guitar.
Yeah.
And now the systems are so good, and I've actually worked very closely with engineers having systems built for me. I monitor the process very carefully when I'm on the stage, either for solo or with orchestra, to make it very, very natural so that when you're sitting in the hall, you think you're in my living room.
Well, that actually, I think, is probably a very major reason for orchestras, because if you think in terms of a rock band, for instance,
right.
you would have an acoustic guitar. And when I was starting out, I would play acoustic. But in order to get any kind of fullness, I strummed more than I played any kind of lead things on the mm-hmm. guitar, because there's no way you were going to hear that. But you'd hear the strumming
right.
much more.
And I really like working with steel string players. I like working with electric guitars. I think that the mixture of that sound with nylon is something very attractive. And I was invited by Laurindo Almeida, who brought bossa nova to the West back in the 50s from Brazil, and Larry Coryell, the jazz rock guitarist, to be part of a trio with them.
Right.
And I've since really been drawn to different genres and different styles.
When you're working with the composers, are you giving them direction? I want this style, I want this key, I want... How does that part work?
It's a great question, and one that's very, very individual to the circumstance. So, for example, with Steve Vai, we were just jamming one day. Yeah, he's written a suite for the two of us to play, but I wanted something shorter for this album, and I began to improvise with him, doing Paraguayan. So this is a work by Agustin Barrios, who was an Indian from Paraguay, and Steve began to improvise with that, and it was just beautiful. So I said, let's do that on the album.
All right. From Green Sleeves to Steve Vai. What a great guitar journey.